True Consequences is a proud member of the Borealis Podcasters Guild.
The Oracle Network.
True Consequences is a true crime and mystery podcast with stories based in New Mexico and the American Desert Southwest. I'm your host, Eric Carter Bondeen. Good evening and welcome everybody to a very special live stream event this evening. I'm going to be bringing you the story of Katie Palmer. I'm going to be joined by her husband, John Palmer, here in just a moment. But before we start, I want to say welcome to everybody who's watching live. For those of you that are listening later, please know that we are here and can watch this video on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter if you're listening to the recording of this, if you want to see the actual video. Friendly reminder, you can find more about True Consequences at trueconsequences.com. You can find me on Facebook at True Consequences Pod, Twitter at True Cons Pod, and Instagram at True Consequences Pod. But this is not about True Consequences today. This is about the story of Katie Palmer. So I am going to bring up John here, and we're going to go ahead and get started. Welcome, John. How are you?
Eric, I just want to say thank you. Any opportunity that either myself or my family have to discuss what we've been going through the past 10 months, I'm going to graciously accept it. And sincerely, I want to say thank you.
It's my pleasure. John, we talked before this and we talked a couple days ago about this stream. And you know, I'm committed to helping bring awareness to cases like Katie's and others, specifically focused on New Mexico. But you know, I have no problem doing bonus episodes to help get some awareness out there and leveraging my platform. So very, very happy to do this for you. We're going to start off before we get into our conversation, John, with just a quick video clip. Some of you that have been following this case may have already seen this, but I'm going to play it for those that have not yet seen this, and we'll intersperse some video in between all of this. But we're going to go ahead and get started with this clip real quick.
Come tell me what. Well, I was leaving the house to go get a couple of guys that were going to help me do some work today, and I was just clearing my windshield. It was real foggy.
Yeah.
And then I had them on high, and I just couldn't see because the glare was so bad.
Yeah.
Which I shouldn't have driven.
Yeah.
I should have waited at the house until it cleared
up. What side of the road were they on that you noticed?
I didn't know. I thought I hit a telephone pole. I never saw them.
Okay, we're back. So for those of you who don't know, that was some footage from the body camera from the, what would you call him? Highway patrol?
Yes, that is a DPS officer in Texas. We call them state trooper. They're de facto state police.
Okay. Yes. So that was actual footage. We have a couple more clips that we'll play throughout this conversation. Before we get into what happened to Katie, first of all, I want to extend my condolences to you and your family and Katie's family. It's never easy losing a loved one and not getting justice when justice is deserved. It makes it even worse. So from me to you, from another victim's family member to another victim's family member, I offer my condolences to you. My heart goes out to you and your family, and you have my prayers and you have whatever support I can give you. So I just wanted to say that first.
Thank you so much. That is very, very kind. Thank you, Eric.
My pleasure. I know I can't say anything to make it better, but that I will offer whatever I can.
Yes,
so
sir.
I'd like to start this conversation, John, by talking about Katie, who Katie was, what Katie meant to you and your family, and anything you want to share about her.
Absolutely. That's a hard question. It's not hard because speaking about Katie, I wouldn't know where to stop. It's hard because having to answer a question like that, just with one simple word in that sentence, you know, who Katie was. It's really hard speaking about her in past tense. She was an amazing person, and it's hard to eulogize your wife. But Katie was intelligent. She was a lover of nature. She was a lover of science. She was kind. She was respectful. compassionate and caring, beautiful inside and out. She was funny. You know, one thing that I grew to love about her was this laugh. And it's funny because her mom has her mom Rhonda has the same laugh. By nature, they are very loud. And the laugh was full, and it was beautiful. You could definitely hear her before you saw her. Every day, you know, looking back, every day that I got to hear that laugh was a great day. She was my soulmate, and hearing that laugh brought joy to my heart. She was very family-centric. She was the daughter of Tony and Rhonda. Tony lived in Oklahoma. We would go up there. He had a lot of land. He had cattle. Katie would go up there, talk with Tony about family, about things going on that he's doing up there on his land, cattle. Every time she spoke to him, he'd get this grin from ear to ear. He absolutely adored her. Anytime there was any weather, any sort of inclement weather, or, you know, a cell moving in the area, you can rest assured that Katie would be on the phone with her dad, and they would talk at length about weather. Anytime that we had a family trip that we went on with Tony, I think they got more fun out of planning the actual trip than going on the trip itself. Katie's mom, Rhonda, I don't think... In fact, I know there wasn't a day that went by that both of them didn't talk. And hard-pressed to tell you that 2 days went by that they weren't around each other. Rhonda was Katie's best friend. They did everything together, whether it was go out to eat, go run around, go walking, or just enjoy each other's company. Katie adored her mother. Katie adored our kids, of course, as any mother would. Bella had the same relationship with Katie that Katie had with her mom. And as a father and a husband, seeing three generations together all the time was beautiful. Mm. Bella had a great role model with Katie, continues to have one with Rhonda. As a husband and a father, I'm blessed to have married such a wonderful woman. My son takes after Katie. He's a very caring kid. He loves nature, loves science. He has a big heart like his mom. We both, as far as and everybody else in our family, have a hole in it because of what was taken from us. This community, our family, and our friends have been extremely supportive. And I'm just so thankful for that. Katie was a teacher at Scott Middle School. She taught science. She brought a STEM program into Scott Middle School. She created a robotics club. She took students to robotics competitions in the Metroplex. And for those that are in New Mexico, the Metroplex is what we call the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I went on a trip with her and 16 other students to California. And it was STEM-based. We started in Northern California and worked our way down to Southern California. We went to the Tar Pits. We went to the Griffith Observatory. We got to tour Google. And I think she had more fun than all the kids combined. she loved those kids. She treated those kids as her own. One thing that really stuck out with me when she was teaching she had a couple boys in her class played soccer, asked her to come to a game. So she took me and the kids to go see this game. And it was a middle school soccer game. And Eric, it was 45 degrees outside and raining. And I didn't have a kid playing in the game. So about every 5 minutes, I was like, hey, can we go ahead and go? And she said, no. You know, she kept on telling me no. And said, you know, I've got to be here. These kids asked me to come. They didn't have anybody there that was going to be watching them. And so she said, I've got to be there for them. That's the kind of person Katie was. Katie was a beautiful soul. Katie burned bright. We miss her terribly.
Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share it.
I know it's not easy to go through that, but I feel that it's very important for people who did not know Katie to understand how important she was and how loved she was by the people in her life. And I do that with every interview I do. I make sure that that's the first thing we talk about, because, you know, in true crime, it's easy to, and we talked about this before, you and I, John, but it's easy to sensationalize and turn true crime into, some people see it as entertainment, and as a family member of a murder victim, I find that incredibly offensive, because it is the worst day in a family's life when something like this happens, when something tragic like this happens. And so I just ask everyone watching and listening to remember that we are talking about somebody who was loved, incredibly, incredibly loved, and who is incredibly missed. And she deserves respect, and the Palmer family and the extended family all deserve respect as they continue to fight for justice. So I just want to put that out there before we go into the next part. So if you can, John, can you walk me through the events of the day that Katie passed away?
Yes, I will. So the night before, which was April 20th, 2020, I had told her that I was going to get up in the morning and work out. We've got a little outbuilding in our backyard. Started to work out there in the mornings and told her when I got through, I was probably going to go for a walk. She told me, okay, you know, go ahead and wake me up, you know, whenever you go for the walk, which is funny. Katie was not a morning person at all. So half-heartedly told her, hey, that's fine. You know, I will absolutely wake you up to have you tell me no, that you do not want to go for a walk. So about 6:30, went out in the backyard, worked out, sent her a text roughly about 7:10. Asked her she wanted to go walking and didn't get a reply. Thought to myself, okay, well, you know, she's still asleep. I walked into the house, woke her up again, woke her up gently because she wasn't a morning person. Told her that I was going to go for a walk. Asked her if she wanted to come. She never went on morning walks with me ever. She said no. Then I gave her a guilt trip and said, come on, let's go. And for some reason, that day on April 21st, 2020, she decided to take me up on that offer. So she got ready, and I went to go tell our son, Brandon, that his mom and I are going to go for a walk. And Brandon frequently went walking with me in the morning. Very thankful that he didn't that day. It's a blessing that he stayed in bed. Bella was fast asleep. We let her sleep as long as Brandon knew we were gone. We were just walking down our road. So we left roughly about 7:30. Street we live on is Glenwood Drive. It runs east to west. We started walking and we headed west on Glenwood Drive. There are two houses between us and a golf course. Normally, we would go walk on that golf course. That day, there seemed to be some dew on the ground. Katie was teaching kids through distance learning due to COVID. I don't believe at that time she had to sign on until 9:30 or 10. So she said she didn't want to walk through the golf course because she didn't want to get, you know, her ankles wet, legs wet, and then go lay back down. So I said, oh, you know, That's completely fine. We continued walking down Glenwood, walked down. She told me that I believe the day before there were some killdeer, which are birds that nest on the ground, birds that she studied in ornithology class at Austin College, which is a college that we met at, which is one town south of where we now live in Denison. It's located in Sherman, Texas. And she loved killdeer. And so we walked down the road again, heading west. There's a depression in the road, and then it comes back up. There's a, I guess, a housing subdivision called Fairway Estates. There's a couple undeveloped lots and that's where the killdeer were nesting. And we looked and couldn't see any. We could see all those undeveloped lots. There were no killdeer nesting on the ground that we could see. So we turned around and started to walk back. So we were headed east on Glenwood Drive on the north side of the road facing any oncoming traffic. We got approximately a quarter mile from where we turned around, and the last thing remember was walking with Katie, and she looked over. I remember her looking over her left shoulder and saying something to me with a smirk. That's when we got hit. I remember being thrown. I didn't feel the impact, and we did not hear the truck. The truck that hit us was a F-250, and that's a 2 or 3 ton truck. It hit us. I'm flying through the air. I can see out of my right eye the truck, and it seemed like we were going about at the same speed. I hit the ground, rolled, came to it. I never lost consciousness at all. I remember just being on the ground. I remember the smell of grass. Tried to get up. I could only get to my hands and knees. It felt like somebody had a ratchet strap around my middle section, around my upper abdomen, and it felt like they were ratcheting it. And very, 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 very painful. That's when
it's okay.
That's when I looked up and saw Katie. We had got hit in that truck, which had crossed over the road, hit us. An expert would later tell the district attorney's office that truck hit us and projected us 70 feet. It hit us so hard, it knocked us both out of our shoes. When I looked up and I got to my hands and knees, I saw Katie. She had tilted up. She had propped herself up on her left side, and she was looking in my direction, but she was looking almost past me. And she let out, you can still hear it. It was a horrible moan. The kind of moan that you knew there was a lot of pain behind it. I tried to stand up. I could not stand up. I crawled over to my wife, laid her as best I could on her back. At this point, Corey Foster, who hit us, who was a neighbor, he had lived, who lives on our road who lived across the street from where we went to go look for killdeer about a quarter mile away. He hit us. He's the gentleman that was in the clip that you played. He had yelled, and I'm paraphrasing, "I couldn't see. I didn't know it was y'all." I grabbed my wife's hand, and another neighbor at that time had come over, and she had sat down in the grass by Katie's head, and I was holding Katie's hand, begging for her to breathe. She was not breathing. Beg for her to breathe. I thought, man, if she could just breathe, everything is going to be fine.
It's okay.
She took a deep breath. And for the time being, for that 5 or 10 seconds, I thought it's going to be okay. She is breathing. You know, thank God she's breathing. And then that's when I noticed that she wasn't blinking, and her eyes were fixed. They were staring straight up at the sky, and she was taking shallow breaths, probably every, 10 to 15 seconds. And I reached up as best I could, tried to get her to blink her eyes, anything, just begging her to stay with us. Just stay with us. Told her how much I loved her. Told her how much we needed her. How much the kids need her. That everything's going to be fine. I kept telling her this, as well as myself. Our neighbor that was seated at Katie's head was a calming voice, and I never looked up once to I had never met her before. Never once looked up to see her face. I would end up meeting her months later and never recognized her because I was so fixed on Katie. Was yelling for somebody to call for the police. Corey Foster had come up to me when I was laying next to my dying or dead wife, and tried to give me my cell phone that was practically bent in half so I could make a phone call. Came back, tried to offer me a bottle of water. I think before then he had made the 911 call. We waited. I remember hearing those sirens and just thinking, man, they're going to get here. She's going to be fine. And I seemed like an eternity, but I know those guys got there just as fast as they could. The paramedics, firefighters that showed up, gave immediate attention to Katie. They focused on her and then, you know, asked me if I was involved, and I did tell them I was involved. I got put on a stretcher. I got loaded back up. I got loaded into the back of an ambulance. And, that point I just kept on asking, you know, she wasn't blinking. They told me, you know, she's going to be taken to a facility that's going to take care of her. They started working on me. While I was in the back of an ambulance, it's the first time that I met the DPS officer, Tarif Al-Khatib, that was in charge of this investigation. He asked me about Corey. He asked me what happened. I told him exactly where we were on the road. We were walking, you know, again on the north side of the road, headed east, facing traffic. We got hit from behind. He knocked our shoes off. He was going way too fast. I got taken to the ICU at Texoma Medical Center, which is a local hospital here. My wife was care flighted to a trauma center in Plano, Texas. And Corey Foster, at the end of the day, was given a ride home by DPS. I was taken to the hospital. My wife was care flighted, never to return to our house. And at the end of the day, Corey Foster was given a ride home by DPS. At the hospital, I was in complete shock, went through triage, asked about Katie numerous times, you know, was told that, you know, as soon as any new information was provided, I would be updated. My brother-in-law dropped off his phone. I had some family members arrive. I got a phone call. There was a lot of misinformation that day, just with the trauma of everything that happened. I was told that she was going to be fine, that it was just some internal bleeding, and that her head was fine and everything was going to be fine. And then I got a phone call 2 hours later stating that she's not going to make it. My family took my kids down to see their mom, to see her body. She was on machines. We had decided that she was going to donate her organs. We had a company reach out to us. You know, my wife checked that donor box. Again, very thoughtful, very caring person. She checked that box. They had reached out to Katie's mom and asked if, you know, we would honor that. After speaking with Rhonda, absolutely. That's what Katie would have wanted. Like I said before, she was very compassionate and caring. All the way up until the end, she donated her heart, lungs, liver, and kidneys, and she saved lives. Our absolute worst day was somebody's best day, was some family's best day. That was the last, that was her last act. And how fitting for such a beautiful soul to leave this world and help others. My kids visited her in the hospital. Being a father, being a parent, it was hard to not be there with my children in their time of need. That was difficult. But they had a loving with them, and they still do. They eventually came to visit me in the hospital, and that was very hard. What do you say to two children that just lost their mother? There is nothing. There's no words that could fill the void left by this tragic incident. I got to tell them that I love them, that their mom loved them, and they knew that. There wasn't a day that went by that Katie didn't tell both of our children how much she loved and adored them. Katie told me that her most important job and her favorite job was being a mom. The kids left. Everybody left. Somehow I went to sleep, and I got a call at 1 a.m. the following morning, and they did confirm that Katie was brain dead. That's what happened on April 21st, 2020.
I know that there is nothing that I can say that's going to make any difference. I am so, so sorry for your loss. And I just want to thank you for your courage and your willingness to share your story. I don't know if you saw any of the comments, but a lot of people are behind you and sending their love to you and your family. And I know nothing is going to make it better, but I think that the starting point on, I'm not sure, but I feel like you probably agree, is to get that day in court and to have justice for Katie. Go ahead.
No, and I mean, that's what we want. We want accountability. Mm-hmm. Eric, Corey Foster needs to be held accountable for what he did that day. I know that you haven't gone into details, and I know there's other clips that you probably want to play, but what Corey Foster did, and I'm sure what we're going to go into more detail about, was criminal, was mm-hmm. reckless, obviously negligent. He needs to be held accountable.
Absolutely.
DPS, for what they didn't do that day, they need to be held accountable. This case needs to be tried in open court, not handled behind closed doors.
Yeah.
A crime was committed and a beautiful life was taken, never to return.
Absolutely needs to be some sort of justice here. So I'm going to play a couple more clips here, and then we'll go into the details of what happened, and why, okay, and why justice is not here yet. So let's get this pulled up here real quick.
Corey, yeah. How much did he have to burn? Nothing. Last time. Oh. I mean, can smell alcohol. Oh yeah. I mean, I had a couple of whiskeys last night. But about 6 o'clock.
7 o'clock?
7 o'clock? Yeah.
That was the lightest you had him?
I mean, I went to bed early.
Okay. So you had how many last yesterday?
I mean, honestly, I don't know.
I'm smelling it pretty strong coming from the breath today is why I'm asking how late did you stop? How late did you have your last one?
It's 7 o'clock probably.
7?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if you had to guess how many you maybe had, how many would that be?
I mean, over the course of the day, probably 4 or 5.
Okay. Over the entire day yesterday?
Yeah.
Okay. So when did you say you quit drinking for?
8 or 9 o'clock, okay. I guess. 7? I don't know.
You must have drank a lot last night, though, because it's still going up from there. You're under the limit, but to still have that in your system that many hours later, okay?
Yeah.
I would like to thank today's sponsor, Southwest Labs. Are you like me, and do you hate the hassle of having to call your doctor to schedule an appointment? That just drives me crazy. Well, guess what? There's an easier way, and it's called Southwest Labs. Southwest Labs makes medical testing super simple. You don't have to call your doctor to make an appointment and wait for 3 months. Southwest Labs offers a huge variety of tests, including STD testing, prostate screening, diabetes monitoring, COVID testing, and more. All you have to do is choose your test, get tested, and then you can get your results with a doctor's interpretation virtually. Southwest Labs has locations in Albuquerque and Las Cruces, and all you have to do is call 505-609-LABS or visit southwestlab.com. And even better, you can find Southwest Labs on social media at Southwest Lab for more information. Schedule a test today and mention this ad when you schedule your appointment. Take the hassle out of medical screening and take control of your health today with Southwest Labs.
I'm sorry for making you endure these videos again, John. It's never my intent to re-traumatize people, but I think that this information is really important for people to know exactly what happened and exactly why you're asking for justice and you're asking for accountability, because, you know, I think that there may have been some, and I'll let you get into that, but there may have been some leniency on the part of the initial investigator and maybe even some, you know, negligence to a certain extent that has jeopardized, I think, what has happened. So let's talk about how, I mean, obviously he had been drinking.
Yes.
We don't know if there were other substances in his system, and I'll let you talk about that as well. But to blow a .06, 50 minutes after the accident, he had not stopped drinking the night before. That just your body, it would have metabolized it more. I mean, I'm not a scientist, but that's significantly elevated alcohol in your breath.
You're not a scientist, but you have common sense. And I feel as if the DPS officer that day had common sense. Corey Foster right now would be preparing for a criminal trial. I wholeheartedly agree with you. A .06, 50 minutes after crossing over the road, striking two pedestrians, knocking them out of their shoes, killing one, and sending one to the ICU. Common sense would tell you that this man was probably, more than likely, I'm just going to say this, I believe he was at a .08 or greater when he hit us. It's inexcusable. First off, why the trooper did not even ask Corey Foster for a blood test? Never asked him once. That was a complete and utter failure on the part of DPS that day. Complete failure. We're talking about a officer that has a lot of experience. The negligence that he displayed is horrendous. These DPS officers are the best of the best. And Sharif Al-Khatib was anything but that on 4/21/2020. And you had mentioned that, you know, we don't know what other substances he had in his system. A blood test would have shown if he did or didn't. But because there was a complete failure and horrible judgment displayed that day, Cordy Foster was not given a blood test. There's absolutely no excuse for that. Complete failure, no excuse.
He has a history of interacting with law enforcement, and he has a history of substances. Is that accurate?
He's got a 25-year record. Yes. I believe he's had two DUIs or PIs in the past. Yes, absolutely. Everything about that day was inconsistent from the beginning, from how DPS treated Cordy Foster to, as in that last clip showed, his inconsistent story on when he stopped drinking, his inconsistency on how many drinks he had. Going back to the first clip, he claimed that the fog caused his blindness, and then he blamed it on the sun. Fog and sun. He said he never saw us. He thought he hit a telephone pole. Stated to the trooper, I probably shouldn't have drove. Didn't know what side of the road he was on. Didn't know what side of the road we were on. Didn't know where he was at. In that first clip, in my opinion, he seemed confused. Just so everybody is aware, he hit us at roughly 7:45 in the morning. The trooper was dispatched from Pottsboro, Texas at 7:55 in the morning and arrived on scene at approximately 8:15 a.m. So when you're first seeing Cordy Foster for the first time on body cam, it had been 30 minutes. And still, in my opinion, he looked confused and dazed. And if Tarif Al-Khatib had done his job that day, our family wouldn't be here 10 months later with nothing but questions that don't have answers.
Cordy was administered a field sobriety test, which he passed, allegedly. But I mean, if you're at a 0.06 and you're used to drinking, I wouldn't see it as a difficult stretch to believe that somebody could pass. But I think there probably is some concern about that test in particular. And then again, like you highlighted, the fact that there was no blood test administered, which is a huge oversight. And then I think you talked about the fact that the scene was never secured, you know, wasn't marked off as a crime scene. Is that correct?
You are 100% correct. So just to, you know, again, go back, no blood test, not even a blood test requested. In addition, the DPS officer never asked Cordy Foster if he was on his cell phone, never asked if this was a case of distracted driving, never asked to see his cell phone. Officer didn't ask any of the first responders what Foster had been up to for the 30 minutes prior to him arriving on scene. There were, again, at least two neighbors of mine that were on site. The trooper never talked to them at all. One was the woman that I discussed that sat right next to Katie the entire time I was laying next to Katie. Never once talked to her. We had a neighbor that was across the street that had actually heard the truck hit Katie and I. He looked out of his window in his kitchen, and from 150 feet away, identified Cordy and his truck through that really dense fog. Cordy said was present when he hit us. DPS never talked to these people. You look on body cam footage, and both neighbors, very, very active. Very active. Both can be seen on body cam talking to other DPS officers. There was never any narrative on what these officers observed that day as far as speaking with both of the neighbors. Nothing from first responders. You're correct. Tarif Al-Khatib did not mark the scene. As a DPS officer arriving to an incident like this, I believe you would be there to gather information. Want to mark where Katie's body was. You would want to mark where Cordy Foster stopped his truck. You might want to talk to the neighbor across the street who was there the entire time. Might have spoke to the neighbor that was with Katie and I prior to me being put into an ambulance and Katie being airlifted. Might want to ask her what she saw.
So no investigation. not even the fundamentals of investigation, aside from talking with Corey. So that's frustrating in and of itself. Can we talk about what happened with the grand jury and the DA and where you're at now? And then we'll kind of wrap up with what you want, you know, what you want to see happen and what we can do to help you.
Sure. Well, guess we can start with the district attorney. Our district attorney is Brett Smith. I reached out to Brett, wanted to know what the status of this case is. I don't remember how many weeks had passed. I know that, you know, again, this incident occurred on the 21st of April, and the grand jury hearing was on the 19th of August. And I first called Brett Smith, asked him about the case. He told me that he was aware of the case. He informed me that he hadn't received the final report from DPS, and he was waiting on that, and stated that I probably knew more about it than him, which at the time was absolutely fair. He hadn't received the paperwork. It's fine. My lawyer had received a copy of the crash report from the DPS officer directly. So we probably at the time did have more information than I think a week or so had passed. My mother-in-law, Rhonda Neal, reached out to Brett. She had found a phone number for him, I believe on Facebook, called Brett. That was her first dealing with Brett. Did not go how my first interaction with Brett went. He was hostile, very agitated that she had a cell phone number, told her that you should never contact a public official on their cell phone, regardless if it was posted on Facebook or not. She just looked his profile up. That's a mother that just lost her daughter. Okay. No one could blame her for calling him. Told her at this point, he had heard nothing about it. Didn't know who Katie was. Eric, how would you feel? I think if your daughter was killed and the one person that you're going to have to put all your trust into told you, after telling me that he knew about the case, told you that he had no knowledge of who she was, and that you shouldn't have called her. Pardon me, you shouldn't have called him. I don't think that would set well.
No.
I don't think that would set well at all. Our family was very emotional. Our friends and family, very emotional at this time. We have no platform, okay? The only platform that people have sometimes, social media. So Rhonda took to social media. She was very, very emotional, as she should be. Had posted about this conversation with our district attorney, Brett Smith. As a result, and as you could imagine, a lot of people were not happy with this. The DA's office was flooded with calls. Brett Smith was put in a spotlight on social media. The next two phone calls I received from Brett Smith weren't about our case. They were about his public image and social media, about what's being said about him on Facebook. That's what our elected DA who campaigned for this position called me about. As a victim and a widower, I apologized to him, told him that I would do everything I could to ease this burden that was put upon him. And then the fourth meeting we had was between myself, Rhonda, Tony, who's Katie's father, and Logan, who's Katie's brother. And it was with Brett Smith, Don Hoover, who's a prosecutor, and there was a female prosecutor there as well. Meeting started off. I brought pictures of Katie and wanted to introduce them to Katie. They had never met Katie. Don Hoover and the other prosecutor there looked at all the pictures, seemed very interested in what we had to say. Brett was very dismissive, told me that he'd already seen this all on Facebook, tried to stop me. I told him he's going to have to wait. I've got to get through this. I've got to introduce you to my wife. At which point, when I was through for the third time, Brett brought up social media, directly addressed Rhonda, was very dismissive to Rhonda, would not let her, for some point, time, get a word in edgewise. And that was very disheartening again, as you could imagine. When he wanted the conversation to end about social media, Eric, his response to us was for us to call off our jihad. Those were the words from the district attorney of Grayson County, Brett Smith, call off your jihad. He let out a laugh, and that fell dead in the room. I posted this on social media before. I don't know if it was him trying to make a joke, but he failed miserably at that. We listened to Brett. We listened to the other two prosecutors in the room who were, and as I've stated before, the epitome of professionalism. They listened to us. They answered our questions. We left the meeting, and we felt like we had a shot at justice based off the other two prosecutors there. Next, I had meetings with Kerry Ashmore. Ashmore was he's the first assistant district attorney of Grayson County. We met a couple times. He told me how he thought this was going to be difficult to prove that Corey Foster was reckless. He thought that he was going to have a hard time proving he was reckless. Eric, I just want to bring up the facts that Corey Foster, as per the report, said he couldn't see as soon as he left his driveway. There's a clip on Facebook that I've recorded and that I've shown. He lives a quarter mile away from where he hit us, and driving 35 miles an hour, it took 38 seconds. Corey Foster drove blind for 38 seconds. He crossed over the road, hit two pedestrians, threw us 70 feet, killed my wife, put me in the ICU. 50 minutes later, blew a .06. How is that not reckless? That is the definition of reckless. But Kerry Ashmore said he'd have a hard time proving that. I would vehemently disagree with him. He was reluctant to bring up alcohol at all as being a factor because Foster was administered a PBT, a portable breathalyzer test, and blew a .06. Again, 50 minutes later. DPS report states that alcohol may or may not have been a contributing factor. So alcohol was not ruled out, but Ashmore decided not to bring that up as per what he told me. In addition, the DA's office would present the charge of criminally negligent homicide against Corey Foster. Nothing was ever presented for what Corey Foster did to me. I was hit by his truck. I was thrown 70 feet. I was much more fortunate than Katie. Obviously, I did not die from the incident or the impact. The DA's office never brought up charges against Corey Foster for what he did to me, which is, simply put, aggravated assault. So that was another failure. So we can get to the grand jury. The grand jury, Eric, was held on August 19th. And the show of support from family and friends that day was amazing. It was a true testament to what an outstanding person Katie Palmer was. Throughout the entire day, that we had 75 to 100 people throughout the day, from 8:30 in the morning to 3:30 p.m., showing their support for Katie. I believe I went up there at about noon. Kerry Ashmore went in there. Kerry Ashmore presented to the grand jury. I was told prior to the grand jury's decision, Kerry Ashmore sat next to me for about 10, 15 minutes and told me what he had said to him. They had presented criminally negligent homicide and manslaughter charges. Kerry told me he went into some appellate cases where these counts were overturned, I believe is what he told me, which at the time stunned me. That to me seems like what a defense attorney would do if given the chance to speak in front of a grand jury. He would tell me that he asked the consultant who recreated the scene. By the way, DPS did not recreate the accident. They're experts at this. They did not recreate the accident at all. That is mind-blowing to me. So you didn't mark the scene, and you didn't recreate the accident. The county got an expert in to recreate the scene. They had to recreate the scene, and this is another failure on DPS's part. They had to recreate the scene with pictures my wife's aunt took the day after, because I believe the only pictures that the DA got were pictures of the truck. So again, another complete failure. He told me that he had the consultant talk to the grand jury about a theory about drift and what drift is. when you aren't paying attention to the road or maybe look down at your phone. I believe there's a certain amount of degrees that you will drift over. And at the rate of speed they said he was going, which was, I believe, around 40 miles per hour. I think they said 34 to 44 miles per hour. So we'll call it 40 miles per hour. Said that it would have taken him 2 seconds to drift over from where he might have been to when he hit us, which again is very confusing to me. Everything I've read, everything I've been told, Corey Foster being distracted by something he was looking at outside of his vehicle or his cell phone, that was never brought up. So we're already introducing, which is what I believe that Kerry Ashmore did. Tarif Alqaty went in there and testified after Kerry Ashmore was finished. Tarif came out, looked me in the eyes, told me he thought that everything went just fine in there. He expected to see me again for court. As he was shaking my hand, I held on to his and I looked him in the eyes and asked him if he did everything that he possibly could. And he looked me in the eyes and said that he did. After Tarif was done, the consultant went in, the consultant that recreated the scene. He was in there for same time, 30, 45 minutes. And then he left. I had actually gone in prior to Tarif. I spoke to the grand jury. I gave my testimony. I answered my questions. And then, you know, again, sat and watched Tarif and watched the consultant leave. And then Kerry Ashmore went back in there, came out, and I believe the grand jury deliberated for 30, 45 minutes. Arrogance of rule, hollow, and helpless feeling, not knowing what's being discussed behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. Knowing that justice for your wife, justice for your family, and just justice is waiting. The grand jurors filed out. Kerry Ashmore came up to me. My brother-in-law, Logan, was sitting next to me on the bench and came up to me shaking his head and said that no build it. Told me he was sorry. He sat next to me, said that he felt like he let me down, which he did. Mm-hmm. I hugged my brother-in-law, Katie's brother, didn't have any words. We walked downstairs to the people that were out there. We told them that the grand jury decided to no bill the case. And 6 months later, after that grand jury hearing, Eric, we're still fighting it. I was told by Kerry that only 11 jurors showed up. The grand jury consists of 12. 11 jurors showed up. One juror recused himself, which left us with 10. In Texas, you have to get 9 votes for a true bill. So already the odds were stacked against us before the day even started. We had to get 90% of those jurors to agree, just to agree that there was enough evidence to move to a pettit jury, to have this go to trial. Apparently, we fell short. The DPS report, which I'm hoping that the grand jury saw, there was a warrant at large in there, an arrest warrant for criminally negligent homicide, which to me states that DPS, Corey Foster, was guilty of that charge. I've been told that the consultant also would confirm that they believe that he should have been brought in for criminally negligent homicide. So if you got two entities that state that, yes, we're in agreement that this man was reckless, I think the fault lies with the DA's office, 110%. There's an old saying that I believe it goes that the DA could get grand jury to indict a ham sandwich if they wanted to. It's just known that prosecutor can go in there, and if they're passionate about a case, they can get an indictment. With the facts alone that we've already talked about, how did the DA's office go in there and not get an indictment? It's a complete failure of justice, complete and utter failure from the top all the way down.
From the beginning.
Correct.
It's been that way. Yeah.
It absolutely has.
what can my listeners, what can the people watching, what can the people on social media do to help with Katie's cause?
Keep standing with us. We have a Facebook page, Justice for Katie Palmer. Stand with us. Help us get accountability. Like I said before, Corey Foster needs to be held accountable for what he did. DPS needs to be held accountable for what they didn't do. This case needs to be tried in an open court. Corey Foster was reckless. Corey Foster was negligent. Katie Palmer was killed. Corey Foster didn't even get a citation. How is that justice? How is that justice at all? It's not. If you live in Texas, there's a bill that Representative Terry Meza has put before the Texas House. It's House Bill 1287. It's called Colton's Law. There was a young man, Colton Carney, had been driving to work. His truck broke down. He decided to walk to work. He was hit by a driver and killed. The police never got a blood test. And their reason behind not getting a blood test was that the officer stated that, it's 8 o'clock in the morning. No one drinks in the morning. This bill, if passed into law, will require that any motorist that hits a pedestrian and either causes serious bodily injury or death, that motorist will be required to get a blood test and screen for drugs and alcohol. And I really feel for Michelle Carney. That's Colton's mom, who has been campaigning for this and got the support of Representative Meza. And she's pushing hard for this. So for those of you in Texas, House Bill 1287 is important. This bill needs to become a law. If you know who your representative is, call them. If you don't know, find out who it is. I just want everybody to remember that this could have been your wife, your mother, your daughter, your sister, your cousin, or your friend. Your kids could be without their mom. You could be without your spouse. What happened on April 21st, 2020 was tragic, but it was no accident. Choices were made. Lives were forever changed. And in this case, one beautiful soul was taken from us, never will return. Please keep standing with us. All we want is justice. That's all we want.
Yeah. If you can, please help. Please, if you are in Texas, call your representative in support of this bill. Join the Justice for Katie Palmer Facebook page. There's also a Twitter page and an Instagram page that you can join and follow as well. I'm gonna wrap this up by playing those last two clips. Before I do, is there anything else that you want to say, John?
Eric, I just want to thank you. You know, again, for those of us that don't have a platform, for you to allow us to come on your podcast means a lot. It helps us in our fight for justice. I just want everybody to remember, you could be me. You could be fighting 10 months later for justice. You could be fighting an uphill battle like me and my family are fighting here in Grayson County, Texas. There has to be accountability. There has to be accountability for Corey Foster, for DPS, and for the Grayson County District Attorney's Office to be transparent. We're not asking for much. We're asking for justice. Please stand with us. Thank you very much, Eric.
Thank you, John. Thank you, everybody, for joining. My heart goes out to the Palmer family and to Katie's family as well. And whatever I can do, you are always welcome back on this show to give us an update, to ask for any additional support you need. If there's anything you need me to share on my social media platforms, let me know. I'm here for you. I'm here behind you, supporting you. I know better than most what it's like to not have justice for a family member. It is the worst feeling. It's almost, I don't want to say it's worse than losing that person, but it does make it a lot harder to grieve. And so thank you for being so honest and so upfront and willing to share Katie's story with us. Thank you to everybody for listening.
Thank you, friend.
Absolutely. We're going to play those last two clips, but just stay safe out there, everybody, and call your representative, get involved, and see what you can do to help support this cause.
He said we were facing traffic, walking east, and he come up from behind them. So he was on the wrong side of the road, too, and hit them. And his left headlight and stuff was hit him, but he's in an F-250. And he said he thought he hit a telephone pole. He's like, I didn't even know what I hit. Because he said my windshield was real misty and stuff and fogged up, and he's driving towards the sun. So, and it crept and crept and crept, and then it got to an 06. But, I mean, I could smell it when I walked up, you know.
Hey, bud. We're not going to. That was still from last night.
We got that list.
But I mean, he flat out says, he goes, I couldn't see. Which, when I leave my house, I drive directly to the east, and it was prior to this crash happened, or after. And yeah, I couldn't even see the road, because I couldn't get the fog off my windshield, and then the sun, driving into the sun, you know, I mean, I get it, he was blind, but I mean, he's on the wrong side of the road too, you know. I can't believe he was that high still today. He said, he's like, man, I quit drinking like at 8 o'clock last night, which I'm not really buying that to be that, you know, at this time of day. But oh yeah.
Thanks for listening to True Consequences. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram at True Consequences Pod, and on Twitter at True Cons Pod. True Consequences is listener supported. If you'd like to support this one man show, please go to patreon.com/True Consequences. Thanks for listening, and stay safe, New Mexico.